In this episode of the Tech Stack, it's Intel Tech Tour 2025, Panther Lake, Clearwater Forest, and 18A. Next. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, to another fine episode of the Tech Stack. Today is Friday, October 10th, and we have been running flat out on the Intel event for 2025 that everybody looks forward to, Tech Tour. And Jim and Marco were boots on the ground at that event. Gentlemen, great to see you again. With me, as always, Jim McGregor of Tirius Research. The terrific Tirius Research, Jim. The effervescent Marco Ciuppetta of Hot Tech Vision and Analysis, my brother in business and life. And Mark Vina, Smart Tech Research. Good to have you with us again, guys.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Happy Friday. So, we've been running flat out. It has been a busy week. Lots to unpack from the folks at Intel. Lots of stuff firing in general these days. Shows galore. Travel galore. Jim, you've been on a plane for what seems like at least 3 months constantly.
Yes.
And, you know, but that's all good. I guess, you know, better than the alternative, as they say. So, let's you know, unpack a lot of the sights and sounds of Intel Tech Tour 2025. Get your analysis on this. Love to get your sentiment on the energy at Intel as well, because I think, you know, that's what folks are looking to understand. You know, what's the, I guess, what are the vital signs with this big company we used to affectionately refer to as Chipzilla, who is trying to get back on track. So let's start with, I guess in that regard, let's start with 18A, because I think that underpins everything. Certainly the products are important, and we'll get to Panther Lake and Clearwater Forest shortly, but 18A underpins everything for Intel. It's what they're building compute tiles on for these next generation product. Jim, why don't we start with you? 18A, the health of 18A, rumors of its delay and yield issues, I think, have been greatly exaggerated, you know, to coin a phrase. But what were your sense? And I know you actually toured the Arizona Fab too, right?
We did, and so did Marco. We had it was funny because they really kicked the event off with 18A and the Fabs, and it was a great way to do it because, you know, for the past couple of years, I've been saying that we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. This was kind of their exclamation point of, we've done it, we're here, we're moving on. So they've got 18A in production at Fab 52. Fab 62 is constructed, but it doesn't have an equipment in it yet. So we toured Fab 42, which is their last fab that they brought up, and Fab 52. And it's not fully built out yet, but they do have four of six or possibly seven EUV systems in it. They are in production of both Panther Lake and Clearwater Forest. It was a major milestone for them to say, you know, we have it, we're up and running with our own products, and we're going to be ready in 2026 for customer products, for external customers.
Wow. And by the way, Jim, I must say, you look like you're coming out of the quantum realm there with that backdrop, that Tirius backdrop. It's quite stunning. Yes, yes. Marco, you are also toward the fab. Did you don bunny suit, buddy? I did.
I was really happy they had big boy sizes because I looked like a big giant provolone.
I want to see pictures.
We weren't allowed to take our own pictures, but there was a photographer there. So somewhere out there, if you see a bunch of guys in a buddy suit and it's like a bunch of cheese sticks next to a big provolone, I'm the big provolone. So, but yeah.
it was beautiful, my Italian friend.
So I gotta tell you, the fab tour for me was really eye-opening, right? I've been to multiple fabs in my lifetime, but none really bleeding edge, you know, leading edge fabs. And when you hear stories about, oh, company A is building a fab here, company B is building a fab there, it doesn't really convey the sense of scale and how many resources are actually required to pull off something like Intel's Arizona facility. So it really did me good to tour the fabs, to drive around literally, you know, the 700 plus acres and get an external tour, because there really are probably very few companies. You could probably count on one hand the number of companies that could pull off a fab like Intel's Ocotillo, Arizona facility. And, you know, what's really interesting, and I think everyone was scrambling to cover products, right? The embargo's lifted yesterday, and I'm sure lots of the coverage that people are going to read over the next few days are about Panther Lake and Clearwater Forest, with, you know, a passing mention of the fab tours. But something that's, you know, Intel arguably at this moment in time is in production with arguably the most advanced process in the world in the U.S., in a facility that very few companies could ever assemble and build. And I think they're on the right track. I think there was lots of optimism from executives at Intel. And I left ITT with a much more positive feeling about the prospects in the future.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought about it as well. And I think you touched on it perfectly there towards the end of your commentary. The fact that Intel now has a process here stateside in the U.S. and it's competitive with, let's just say, TSMC N3. N2 is coming from TSMC. We know that. We don't know how it performs. They're not there yet. But Intel is there with 18A. It's competitive with folks like TSMC and their N3 process. That's a big deal. And it's not trivial, and it's tens of billions of dollars to build these fabs. So it's a huge commitment. It's what they needed for the turnaround. And really, it certainly, for me, the fact that they're, you know, launching products near term now within the next couple of quarters, that's huge. Mark, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to answer that with a question to the other guys. But the thing that's always been intriguing to me about Intel is that I'm not sure the average person understands the expansiveness of a fab. Now, I have not been to the Arizona fab yet, so I'm kind of jealous. There's probably some bunny suit pictures of me in the past going to other Intel factories. But the sense I get, and Marco, your very, very good piece that you wrote about it, talks about just you really can't wrap your arms around how large this facility is. It's kind of, it's a city within a city. And I guess the question really is that was that jarring, you know, when you actually visited there and you were boots on the ground, because photos don't do it justice. So I want to get that kind of sense from you. And Jen, you as well.
Yeah, it's 750 acres. It's actually six interconnected fabs. One of them, like I said, isn't running, but you've got 12, 22, 32, 42, 52, all running, and 62 built and ready to go. And like I said, they're all interconnected. So wafers can actually, and people can actually go in between the buildings without having to leave the environment. And it is massive. I mean, when you think of everything that goes into that fab in terms of power, cooling, chemicals, you know, resources, it is incredible. And I used to work at the facility up the street, the Chandler facility, but nothing really compares to Ocotillo.
Mm. Yeah.
And the other thing that's really wild that you just don't really think about unless you're really studying the plans and the build out, it's in the middle of the desert, and these fabs use massive amounts of water, right? So the number of water treatment plants, how they're getting water from the ground, how they're capturing rainwater without trying to disrupt the neighboring cities, right? They don't want to disrupt the neighboring towns either. It's really like the amount of thought and the amount of planning that goes into something like that's what I really took away. Like, you don't think about, I'm not going to say the minutia, but these adjacent facilities that are required to keep something like this running in the essentially the desert. It was really impressive. And Intel even goes like the extra step. Lots of the parking lots are covered in solar, and you would think, oh, they're using the solar for the facility, but they're not. The solar's actually getting pumped into the local grid for the nearby town. Like, they're trying to have minimal impact on the surroundings, even though you have this massive bleeding edge facility. It's it's tough to ascertain strictly reading press releases about the build out. I think experiencing it was very good for me.
Yeah. In this day and age of environmental awareness, of understanding it better, you know, as a global community, it is good to see Intel being a, you know, a good neighbor, a good steward. And you know that chip fabs can bring some pretty volatile stuff in the mix for manufacturing. And I think, you know, you had some statistic, Marco. I don't know if you can pull it out of your noggin, but it was something like a very small percentage of actual waste. It's all reclaimed and reused, right?
Yeah. 4% of the actual waste produced by the facility makes it into local landfills.
And that's
impressive. And they've reclaimed millions, you know, millions of gallons of water, and they've produced, you know, millions of kilowatt hours of electricity. It's really, it's not just let's buy some EUV tools and build a fab, right? It's, you need, even if a company had the money to build a fab like this without the experience to sort of build out everything adjacent to it, it's just not happening. It's really impressive.
It takes a full infrastructure to be able to do this. And
absolutely.
And one thing that, you know, is really important to note is the fact that, Marco said that, you know, they're feeding energy back even into the city. You know, they, and you mentioned, Dave, that, you know, they handle hazardous chemicals like hydrofluoric acid.
Yeah.
To Intel's credit and to our industry's credit, there's never been a major environmental disaster with a semiconductor fab anywhere in the world. So it not really speaks to the safety that's built into these facilities.
Right. Yeah. Mark, you've been the occasional cynic here on the cast. just saying, maybe it's the New York vibe. I don't know. But what are your thoughts? Does Intel have a shot to reclaim Chipzilla dominance again, at least in manufacturing, from a manufacturing standpoint?
Well, that's a pretty complex question, but thank it you is. For that.
And thanks for bringing me on the spot. You know.
I know you do. You know, the first thing I would say is that, first of all, I'm a big believer that the United States needs to have a chip presence. Let me say that. There's all kinds of national security reasons why we need to do that. So I'm absolutely a big believer that I'd like to see Intel successful in this. And it's, you know, when guys like Jim and Marco come back and they come back with a very positive vibe, that means a lot to me in terms of just the stuff that you don't see in a press release in terms of what's the general feeling. And let's face it, Intel has gone through a lot in the last just 90 days. They've got a new CEO. There was a bit of I wouldn't say scandal with LBT, but there was some noise around it. Then our fearless commander in chief got involved, and there's a 10% stake. There's been layoffs over there. I think there's some questions about performance of their chips, which we're going to get into with the two chips that we're going to be talking about here shortly. So I want to see Intel succeed. I want to be clear about that. Now, I think there is a private sector question. I think all of you feel this way. You know, at 50,000 feet, I don't like to see the U.S. government placing bets for, you know, kind of standing on the scale and placing bets, not just in the technology space, but in any industry. I'm a pure capitalist at heart, and I believe the market strains out a lot of things. But having said that, you deal with things from a pragmatic standpoint, and it sounds like, you know, the things are going along pretty well with 18A. To everyone's point, there has been a lot of scuttlebutt. Hey, is it ready for prime time? But it sounds, from Marco and Jim's perspective, it looks like they're on track.
Yeah. No, it is encouraging. You make a very good point. We need this here in the U.S. I think the chip industry, the ecosystem at large, is far too dependent on TSMC. I don't know what the statistics are right now these days, but I know it was something like 80% of the world's chip supply was built at TSMC, which is just staggering to think, should they falter in any way, geopolitical or otherwise, what the ramifications would be. But yes, agreed. And even though, you know, government's involved, I'm of two minds there as well, Mark. I agree with you. I am not the type to want government meddling in my free market in tech, especially because I don't think a lot of the old folks on the Hill know much about tech, frankly. But you know, then if you look at the flip side, you know, competitors. You know, China's government is vested in many high tech industries over there, and so do we have to have a competitive foothold as well as a result?
No, I would, Dave, just to respond to that real quickly. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's been a good week in at the political level in terms of what's happened in Israel. It looks like the hostages are coming back. That looks real good, no matter what you say, not you specifically, but what the world says about that. But I think there's a lot of optimism around that. You know, things could turn on a dime if Taiwan ever got invaded by China, and that's still very much on the table. This becomes a much, much bigger deal.
You know? So
I just want to get that on the table.
Yeah, no, amen. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I think we've fabbed it enough. I think everybody, you know, a lot of folks in the industry are rooting for Intel 18A. There was scuttlebutt that it was, you know, delayed, that yields weren't great. You guys did not see any of that, and Intel showed complete confidence in it, doubling down, as it were, if you would, to say, hey, we're launching these products, Panther Lake and Clearwater Forest, which we'll get into now, and it's built, you know, the core, you know, compute tiles are built on 18A, so their livelihood depends on this process as well, and that's a big bet.
And you should also note that, you know, even though this wasn't really part of the tech tour, you know, their foundry, their packaging or OSAT, their packaging capability for foundry services is doing quite well. And it doesn't really get enough credit.
Yeah. Packaging is a big deal, whether it's Foveros or EMIB, embedded multi-die interconnect, blah, blah, whatever that acronym stands for. You know, Intel's packaging prowess is, I don't want to say unmatched because I'm not as familiar with the competitive landscape, but it is top notch. So
it's it is good leading stuff. Edge.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about products. Let's talk about, what do you want to start in the data center first and then go to, the finale with Panther Lake. Yeah. Let's talk Clearwater Forest. That is, Intel's next generation, very high core count data center CPU, 288 cores. They are next generation Dark Mount cores. Are they the Dark Mount cores as well? Dark Mount. Yes. So thoughts on that. Let's get your takeaways, gentlemen. I know, Marco, let's start with you. You dove into that quite deeply on your coverage at Hot Hardware. What do you think about Clearwater Forest? It seems to be a cloud data center, you know, targeted product. It's not a super high end, you know, AI focused. It's more like bring as many, you know, clients and containers and VMs that you can serve, right? What's that all about?
Yeah. So, you know, cloud native Microsoft, microservices, 5G telco infrastructure, anywhere that, you know, massive parallelism is required to, you know, maintain performance and reliability is where Clearwater Forest fits in. And it seems like it's going to be a really strong product, right? So this is it's entirely E-cores, not a hybrid architecture like Panther Lake. The top core count SKUs will go up to 288 cores, and 2P versions will be available. So you can get two socket servers and have 576 cores per server. And, you know, what that allows Intel to do is, you know, increase density overall. And their customers, I'm forgetting the exact number, but it was something like an 8-to-1 consolidation. Should you be upgrading your infrastructure versus like a 3-gen, an N-3 Xeon setup? So you can turn a massive data center into a couple of racks with Clearwater Forest. And even though it is an all E-core design, something that's lost in the translation is these latest E-cores are something like 80 to 90% as performant as the previous gen Lion Cove P-cores, right? So yes, they're not quite as powerful as Intel's P-cores, but there are no slouches either, right? There's been upgrades, you know, to the cache. There have been upgrades to the power and clock gating. There's more intelligence in how, you know, the voltage frequency curve ramps up and down. So they're looking like really strong products. And another plus is that they're going to drop into existing Xeon 6 series platforms. So partners don't really have to redesign their systems. They just have to update some BIOSes, qualify these new chips, and you know, new servers are ready to go. Essentially, I'm oversimplifying, but that's mostly the case. So Clearwater Forest looks poised to be a really killer product, and Intel hasn't disclosed a massive number of benchmarks, but performance and power should be really competitive with those chips.
Yeah, if you think about it competitively versus AMD, which has been chipping away at Intel data center server market share with EPYC, they had a core density per socket deficit that Intel needed to make up, and I think Clearwater Forest closes that gap nicely. Jim, what are your thoughts in general on Clearwater?
Well, first off, we should also note that this is actually called Xeon 6 Plus.
Yeah,
I don't think that was really a good name for it, because it is a major advancement ahead in terms of the architecture. Even the way they built the core, it's now built on Intel's 3D Foveros technology. So they constructed it differently. And this is the product I've been waiting for. I was really excited about this. Now, you got to remember that going to Xeon 6, Intel kind of went kind of this dual core strategy, the performance core and the efficiency cores. They got rid of the hyper-threading. They tried to make something with a lot of cores, you know, really increased density for these kind of web services and networking processing type applications. And this is a follow-on to Sierra Forest. However, Sierra Forest used the kind of the E-core technology, basically the E-core technology that was in Meteor Lake. Clearwater Forest is using the E-cores that were really introduced first in Lunar Lake. And this is kind of the second generation of it, a Dark Mont. But when they went to Lunar Lake, that was a major jump in E-core technology. I mean, they went from doing, you know, 15-20%, you know, workloads on a PC on the E-cores to doing like 80% or 85% of the workloads on the E-cores. It was a major improvement in that architecture. And now we're seeing that architecture go into the server realm. So very excited about this. I think we're going to see just massive benchmark improvements on this, not to mention the density that we're getting out of this with 18A and the new packaging technology that they're using and everything else. So, yeah. I mean, really excited. I still think Intel is on the right track with having certain products without hyper-threading, you know, and yeah. really targeting these types of applications.
Yeah, when you talk about data center applications, certainly threading, hyper-threading in general, or symmetric multi-threading is kind of a double-edged sword. You get things like noisy neighbor issues and whatnot with that. So it makes sense that it's a mini-core, single-thread core architecture. Also, big gains in memory bandwidth, right? I think it's like 12-channel DDR, yes. 5800 or something like that. Huge.
Yeah. It's up to 12 channel and up to 8,000 mega transfers a second. So not only is there an increase in the number of memory channels, the max frequency is boosted. So, you know, up to, I believe if I might get the detail wrong, it's up to 3.2 terabytes of memory capacity support. And you know, a 50% something boost in memory bandwidth on top of that. So yeah, any bandwidth constrained workloads on Sierra Forest are going to see a huge boost on a Clearwater Forest.
Yeah, I know Panther Lake is January 26. Clearwater Forest, did they give a timeline on that?
Early next that? Year.
Yeah, we're going to see, you know, early to mid next year.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Mark. Thoughts on this? I mean, I think if you look at the competitive landscape versus AMD, it's the answer they need. You also look at some of the encroaching ARM-based solutions from folks like, I don't know, Ampere, you name it, for many core processors. What do you think about Intel's chances in the data center? They have the majority share now. They're just trying to defend it and get some of what they lost back, right?
Well, clearly, yeah, it's really a play to keep AMD and EPYC at arm's length, because they've had some gaps there from a architecture standpoint. I mean, let's face it, AMD will always win most of the time that value proposition answer in terms from a cost standpoint. You know, Intel has always tried to ride the premium, positioning itself with whatever technology offerings it provides. It's always been the, you know, the performance alternative. And I guess the question I really wanted to ask Jim and Marco, even though the benchmark numbers are not out there, are you guys hearing, are there any kind of side conversations that went on and saying, hey, you know what, we feel pretty good about this in terms of closing not just a technology gap, but showing benchmarks that continue to rationalize Intel as a choice, the premier choice to maintain that high market share that they already have in the data center. I'll start with Jim.
I don't think they're really looking to close the gap. I think they're trying to actually kind of establish kind of a new category for these types of workloads. And I think they're doing a very, very good job of it. But no, they feel very, very confident. And like I said, even I was excited. I've been waiting for this for, you know, a year and a half. So I think this is a major, major step for Intel. Marco, what do you think?
Marco? Yeah, so I it's definitely a major step. And, you know, there's actually one massive detail that I forgot to mention, right? Up to 5 times the amount of last level cache on Clearwater Forest 2, right? So in addition to faster and more memory channels, massive amounts of data can stay, you know, there's much more context can stay closer to the cores. So I have a feeling Intel's actually sandbagging it a little bit, because this is, for some workloads, no doubt it is going to be a massive step up, even with like core counts, right? So Darkmont is 17% higher IPC than the previous gen E cores. You factor in all those other enhancements, and there's going to be areas where Clearwater Forest just blows Sierra Forest out of the water, that it's going to be no comparison. So yeah, I think it's going to be a very strong product. It's going to offer huge gains with the majority of workloads.
So, Yeah. I think
Xeon 7, but yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the all P core version will probably be Xeon 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you talk about an all P core chip, you're talking about a different sort of application. You're talking things like, you know, bigger data analytics, you know, heavier duty servers. When you talk about the vast majority of some of this hyperscaler demand these days beyond AI, it's you know, multi-tenant. You know, whole bunch of, you know, VMs,
web services, blah, blah, blah.
Cloud web services, absolutely. So good stuff. Did they say, by the way, last question on Clearwater, we got to move to Panther Lake. Did they talk about, so I know the core compute tiles are built on 18A. Did they talk about other fab processes that are coming into Clearwater?
Yeah, so the I/O tile is the same tile from Sierra Forest. Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, that's on Intel 7?
On Intel 7, and then the base tile is going to be on 3/4.
Okay, so that's an all Intel design too, right?
Yes.
There's no TSMC.
No external foundry on Clearwater Forest.
That's great for margins too. So
Interesting.
All right, well, hey, that's, you know, that's what they need. I'm glad they're... It seems like they're ready to deliver something that's going to make a big impact. So good stuff. We'll have to see when we get them in the labs.
One last piece of performance potential, right? So a slide that Intel shared after the fact. So I already mentioned the 17% higher IPC, right? 1.3x higher performance per watt also. So it's going to be a strong product.
Good stuff. All right. Well, let's move on to Panther Lake. I think that is something that the majority of the mainstream press got mostly excited about. Panther Lake is the next generation, laptop platform product. It may make it into other types of devices as well. But this is the follow-on to Lunar Lake. It is comprised of new E-cores, a little bit of a new architecture as well. Guys, why don't we unpack Panther Lake and talk about some of the benefits of that. Jim, you want to kick us off with Panther Lake?
Well, you know, and they did give us the details of the architecture, and they kind of framed it as this is kind of taking putting Lunar Lake and Arrow Lake kind of together. So you're getting some of both of those architectures merged into one. Obviously, Arrow Lake was their performance device. Lunar Lake was their power efficient device. So they're trying to bring all that in. One of the biggest enhancements was a change to the NPU, where they're increasing the NPU, or they're changing the NPU architecture. Now, it didn't result in a significant increase in overall TOPS, but it did increase the performance efficiency. And they had a significant enhancement in terms of the GPU for AI processing. Matter of fact, this is kind of the different strategies that we're seeing in the market right now, is the fact that you know, like Qualcomm was pushing more of the TOPS on the NPU, Intel was pushing more of the TOPS on the GPU. And refresh me, what was the total TOPS on this?
180.
180, yeah. That was 180. Yeah. I knew it was somewhere up there. But yeah, so I mean, they're really trying to push that efficiency. Now, the question is this the Apple killer? And quite honestly, I don't know. They really didn't provide too many competitive comparisons at the event, and we're not going to see the devices until after CES. So there's still kind of this aura in the air that we have to kind of feel out and see how this is going to compare. Definitely does better than Lunar Lake and comparative to Arrow Lake when we start looking at performance and efficiency numbers. But we're not quite sure how it's going to compare with the competition yet. Matter of fact, the only place they actually compared the chip to the competition was when they were talking about Wi-Fi, and they compared it to Qualcomm and MediaTek. I found that kind of odd.
I'm gonna add something to the stage here. There we go. Yeah, might as well get a little visual going on here.
A little special effects here.
Nice. Absolutely. So yeah, it's interesting, Jim. I think you talk about whether or not this is an Apple killer, an M4 killer, what have you. I think they also have a competitive bar to meet versus Qualcomm Snapdragon X platforms and X2, even though, that's a different sort of animal. It's Windows on ARM. But here we've got a 4-8-4. So, four performance core, 8 E-core, and 4 low power E-core. Marco, why don't we talk about the tiled approach, the disaggregated nature of Panther Lake, and then we should talk about its GPU as well. What are your thoughts on some of the enhancements from a core architecture standpoint that Panther Lake brings?
There's a lot to unpack. We could easily spend an hour on this and we can't. So I'm going to super turbo some of the nuts and bolts, right? Yeah. Intel introduced three different configurations of Panther Lake. There may be more, but there's three initial packages for Panther
Lake.
There's an 8-core. Yeah, there you go. An 8-core with a 4-core GPU, a 4XE 3-core GPU. There's a 16-core also with the 4XE core GPU. And then the top end 16-core with a 12-core XE3 GPU. Now, one nuance. So all three of the chips, all three of the tiles, there's two versions of each, right? There's different compute tiles, there's different I/O tiles, there's different GPU tiles. So that's what makes up the configurations. You'll see the three different tiles and then two pieces of silicon strictly for mechanical purposes. But they're actually three different setups here for these three different chips. And another piece of information that's been lost in a lot of the conversation, the 4-core XE3 GPU is built on Intel 3, right? So Intel is now building a GPU, a separate GPU tile. The big 12-core XE3 is still external foundry, still TSMC. So the top-end SKU, that's more of an Arrow Lake H compare, that GPU is built at TSMC, but Intel is now making a GPU tile. So that's another really cool piece of information. I think it's an across-the-board upgrade versus Lunar Lake. We're going to see efficiency improvements, especially within the cores because of the 18A process and through enhancements to the architecture itself. You're going to have leading edge connectivity. Intel, I know like the Wi-Fi compare that Jim brought up, it's not really exciting, but Intel Wi-Fi is among the best, and you're going to have, Thunderbolt 4 integrated, Wi-Fi 7, the latest Bluetooth 6 core, like lots of great connectivity. Intel's been making huge strides on their GPU software as well. So you're going to have a really strong GPU, the latest CPU core architecture, some of the best I/O, and the NPU upgrades, right? So a small upgrade in terms of TOPS, but a big change in the architecture in terms of utilization. Intel's made big updates to the software to improve performance. And you're going to get those increased TOPS on the NPU at significant lower power and area. So 40% smaller NPU that offers more performance and better utilization. So in terms of what they disclosed, it's really all positive. But how it all comes together, we got to wait till we test it, right?
There's
three different chips, all three also different memory configurations. With I questioned in private conversations, I think it's confusing to the market, but the low end, the entry level 8-core SKU has two different memory specs. The mid-range has two different memory specs, and Intel is setting a has a guideline for the top end SKU that it absolutely has to use the 9600 megatransfer per second memory.
We should know two things about that architecture. One is that there's two kind of generations of, or I should say two versions of LP cores. They're actually the same cores, the E cores, same E cores, but one's on a very low power island. Yeah. So, I mean, they've really optimized that to be run at the lowest possible power rating. So that's a major change that we saw from Lunar Lake. And also that standard 16 core, while the high end is really intended for that thin and light ultra mobile solution, that standard 16 core has the extra PCIe lanes. And that's designed to be paired potentially with an external GPU. Yeah. So they have thought about the entire family in rolling out Panther Lake.
I think they brought back the low power island from Meteor Lake, right? Like Lunar Lake didn't have it, but Meteor Lake had a low power island, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, this is an extra low power island, and a completely separate island extra from low, the rest of the compute die. Basically.
Mark, you've been itching to get in here. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, well, the observation I want to make is that I'm first of all, like Jim, who gets excited about, hey, this chip is coming down the path. I get excited. I'm excited about Panther Lake. And I'm excited about the notion that the entire industry, and Intel has got religion about this, is performance should be viewed by a customer or a consumer, especially at the notebook level, the client level, in terms of you shouldn't have to make a sacrifice whether you're on battery power or whether you're plugged in. You know, yeah, there is going to be benchmarks in terms of actual battery life. But if you recall the mantra in mobile chips, where, well, you know, yeah, you can go on battery life to get extra battery life, but you had to take a performance hit. And what I'm so pleased to see, you hear this with Qualcomm talks about this quite a bit on their SoC, their Snapdragon stuff, which obviously is ARM-based. The reality is that I think what consumers want to hear is that, hey, if I go out and buy a Panther Lake notebook 5 months from now, 4 months from now, 3 months from now, I know from a performance standpoint, I'm not taking a hit if I'm on battery power. I'm going to get great battery life, but there's no differentiation. So that seems to be, you know, a kind of an area that the industry is going. And that's a big deal.
Yeah, Mark, you hit the nail on the head. I forgot about that aspect of it. Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
I need to jump in there because I have two interesting things related to that. No, there's a piece of nuance that, again, it's been lost in a lot of the coverage. So this is not directly related to Mark's question, but it's about 18A health, right? You know, lots of outlets test battery life using a video playback method, and that's a metric that's quoted often. Intel put the media engine on the compute tile. Mm. So that sort of speaks to the health of 18A, right? Because if you're going to test battery life with a video workload, the compute tile is going to be lit up and the others are going to be shut off. So if they're going to have competitive battery life, that needs to be really efficient. And I think it's going to be. Now, to Mark's question, there were multiple changes to the power and clock gating and to something Intel called a intelligent, I'm forgetting the exact name of the algorithms, right? But the way Thread Director works on Panther Lake, now, like virtually the new E cores are so good, almost every like 80% of workloads are going to start on the low power E cores. If they exceed the capacity of those cores, they'll move up to the regular E cores. And if they need it, they'll eventually get to the P cores, right? So the low power E cores are really fairly performant, right? So if many more workloads are starting on the lowest power E cores, it speaks really good to not only performance, but they're obviously going to be the most efficient and offer the best battery life. And with the intelligent like bias controls or something, the AC versus DC power, Intel's claiming 19% improvement, right, in terms of AC versus DC versus previous gen architecture. So roughly 20% better performance on DC power. But the other thing lost in that conversation is that's largely determined by the OEMs and the power profiles they configure for their machines. You can keep the same performance on battery, just not going to get as long battery life. So I think, you know, with OEMs tweaking, you're going to have the option, right? You maybe sacrifice a little bit of battery life, but maintain performance, but you'll still get better battery life with better performance than Lunar Lake.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. There's the visual for you right there.
Yeah.
Intel Thread Director and Power Management. Yeah. They're talking about improved telemetry to the SoC. Lots of different tweaks, optimized scheduling modes for both P core and E core. Lots of different, you know, AC versus DC experience, consistency, both efficiency and performance KPIs. So they have clearly focused on this. And I think when you talk about what Qualcomm came out with Snapdragon X Elite, years back now, that was their biggest, you know, ding on Intel. They just went, look at this thing on when you unplug it from the wall. And so Intel clearly took that to heart, has clearly been focused on that.
Now they got the memo. They got the memo.
And Mac, well, and Mac, Apple has always been strong that way too. So they
the
memo, right?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. And
just changing that routing of how they power up the different cores, that was a huge change. I mean, it started with the P. Well, and that's the theory. You always think that, okay, well, you can do stuff faster on the performance cores and then shut everything down. And that's not always the case. So, I mean, they reversed that for this generation, said, okay, no, we're going to start with those very low power E cores, then go to the E cores, then go to the P cores. So they've changed along with the rest of the industry.
Yeah. So let's finish up on Panther Lake, because we got to close this thing out. We are getting into a very long coverage today, let me tell you. Let's talk about Xe3 GPU and what that will bring to the table. Intel is claiming it will reshape the industry in terms of integrated graphics. Do you guys believe that?
Reshape might be strong wording. It's going to be probably the best. So the 4-core version is a very mainstream GPU. The higher end,
this is the 12. Yeah,
will likely be one of the strongest, if not the strongest, IGPs on the market. It's not a unified design like Strix Halo or what Apple does. So it's not always across multiple workloads, including AI, going to be great. But for gaming and graphics, it's going to be really strong. And on top of the architectural improvements and the better, you know, raw throughput and brute force performance, Intel is also offering multi-frame generation now. So we don't have actual hardcore benchmark numbers, but, you know, we have video up at Hot Hardware, and Jim and I both experienced live demos of a, you know, 12XE laptop running a 1080p game with high settings. And with multi-frame gen, it's doing 200 frames per second, right? So pushing a high frame rate display on an iGPU, and it looked pretty darn good, right? You can make the argument about the AI-generated frames. That's a totally separate discussion. But in terms of the animation smoothness, it looked great to me.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. You can say all you want about the speculation on the impact of their partnership with NVIDIA, but... Intel's graphics unit, you know, the graphics business unit has been very hard at work from a driver standpoint. They've gained a ton of support in the community as well. Almost an unnatural level of support for their products. There's a lot of interest. I'm talking Intel discrete, but there's a lot of, I think, goodwill that they've built as a result of the support of their graphics pipeline in general with software and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I mean, if they can pull it off, Jim, what do you think about the chances for Xe3? And, you know, I'm wondering where that 12 core, by the way, shakes out in terms of SKUs. Are we going to get that in some of the real sexy thin and lights, or is it going to be for chunkier machines?
No, that's, I think we're going to see it in the thin and lights. And I definitely think it sets a new bar for the integrated graphics. And it also kind of shows that Intel isn't standing still in graphics. You know, that multi-frame AI generation that Marco talked about, that's significant. I mean, typically we've seen integrated graphics kind of trail the discrete graphics. This is Intel kind of stepping out in front of it and saying, no, there's other things that we can do to enhance this. And it doesn't just have to be in discrete graphics. So I definitely think it sets a new bar. Is it going to necessarily knock off discrete graphics? No. But I definitely think it's going to put them in a different position with the rest of the PCs out there, the rest of the SoCs out there for this market. I'm looking forward to actually testing this. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, I agree. I think go ahead, Jim. Sorry.
And you mentioned one other thing, and that was the, you know, excitement about NVIDIA. And there's a bunch of, you know, theories about how that's going to impact. Are we going to see NVIDIA GPUs in future products and stuff like that? We have to remember that that partnership just kicked off. And I don't think that that's going to derail Intel in terms of its integrated graphics or anything else. You got to remember that they tried using a discrete graphics tile from AMD in the past. And, you know, that was... That had pluses and minuses. And, you know, I think that we are going to see excitement, and Intel's definitely excited about the relationship with NVIDIA going forward. But we're not going to see products or anything coming out of that for 2, possibly 3 years.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think it's very interesting to see how Intel has improved integrated graphics over the years. They're currently right now with Lunar Lake, they're toe-to-toe with AMD, winning some. AMD winning some, if you, depending on the graphics workload or gaming benchmark or game title. But now, they're claiming this is going to be a significant leap. I think it was a 50% gain or something like that in graphics performance on the highest end SKU. So that's huge. It's significant. Panther Lake is looking pretty stout, at least on paper. But yeah, we want to get those machines in, and I think come CES timeframe, it'll be a lot of testing going on, right?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, gentlemen, we should wrap for the day. I think we have to move on to the next meeting. Lots of meetings lately, right, guys? Until the next one, folks, hit thumbs up and subscribe if you would, so you can get notified when we go live. This is the Tech Stack Webcast, and we thank you very much, and we'll see you on the next Tech Stack.